man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Welcome to another episode of Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Iffy Whitey Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me go ahead and introduce you to them. First up, we have critic for the rap, and on top of all of that, my good friend, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, gosh, Iffy, I'll tell you what's good. A little show called The Mary Tyler Moore Show on Hulu. It has been... quite the salve for me of late. Especially now that I have burned through the entire run of Letterkenny on Hulu, even the brand new season 9. It was only 7 episodes. I gave myself one a day, and in a week, somehow they were gone. But anyway, I've got hundreds of Mary Tyler Moore episodes because those seasons were long back in the day, and that show totally holds up after 50 years now. That's been a nice after dinner moment for me.
I love that. I went to like 10 years ago now, something at the American Cinematheque, but it was for the Sid Caesar or the Show of Shows or whatever. But Carl Reiner was there. Dick Van Dyke was there. Freaking Rosemary showed up. And So they did a little bit on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and I was just in awe. Also, I have such a crush on all of them.
Bisexual greatness.
You cannot slow me down. Come on, Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. Get it, Drea.
Well, that second voice, you know, you love. It's the queen of the Midwest, the princess of the pontoon, staffer, bug zapper, stacking it up. It's Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
Oh, Iffy, that was so great because I definitely remember having to explain to you what a pontoon was at one point.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that you remember that so long. Oh, wonderful. What's good with me is... in the before times, I used to go like weekly. I had a group of friends. We go to the Arclight Hollywood because all sort of live near there. And we would get dinner and then we'd go to a movie and then we'd sit in the courtyard because it's like the best people watching in Los Angeles. Oh, yeah. And we'd talk about the movie every week. And it's my favorite thing in my church. And I miss it desperately. And part of it was we always drank the like super expensive, you know, they have those signature drinks at restaurants. Yep. And the Arclight has a drink called the Big Trouble. That's a whiskey drink that has like this thing called Amir China in it. Anyway, so my friend Amber, who's a delightful human and so thoughtful, on New Year's Eve, without telling any of us, she had spent the last month tracking down the items for the Big Trouble and like talking to bartenders and like did like recipe testing to try and mimic it perfectly. Like literally got candied ginger to go on top and dropped off at each of our houses a kit with all of the stuff on it. So we did like a spontaneous Zoom, and nobody does anything spontaneous anymore, and made our drinks together and had our Big Troubles. And it was so wonderful and unexpected. So
I'm going to cry, Drea. That's the most beautiful friendship story I've heard in so long.
Truly, it was just the smallest, but most, not small. She like put all this effort into it, but it was wonderful and I'm grateful. Yeah. And it still remains good.
Is that drink named for the John Cassavetes Peter Falk movie?
No, I think it's Big Trouble in Little China. Like I think it was from a different, but yeah, the Arclight has, they always do drinks for like the big releases. Oh, yeah. But this is on their, or was on their sort of year round menu. I highly recommend it as a cocktail.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. I was gonna say I would be the worst in making that drink because I would put that drink in a little china glass, like a tiny one, and then people would get the pun and then say, "Can you give this to me in a normal size glass?"
No, go back and get a tumbler. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Ooh, now we have a esteemed guest. You know, shot fam fave. iHeartRadio producer and the producer of the Scrubs podcast, Fake Doctors, Real Friends, freelance writer, our best friend, Joelle Monique. What's good?
Oh my God.
I want to do the like Little Mermaid, sha la 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 la. Like, that's your entrance.
First of all, I feel like you really get me musically, Drea. So thank you. And it's been so long since I've had an iffy intro. That was delightful.
Way too long.
What's good for me right now is Suspect OTB's No Gimmicks, which is a song that is, I believe, like 2 minutes and 28 seconds long, but I am legitimately obsessed with it. I listen to it over and over again. It's like British rap with an old, like, West Coast vibe to it. Big drip blowing out the window of the whip with my seat back, Hey, big stick, wait for any nigga wishing on me for the get back. I said anyone could get it. No gimmicks, big spinners. I let it go until I hear that shit clicking. Delivered cause the life that I'm living. It's a little bit gangsta and a little bit like show-offy, and like, there's no place to stunt anymore, right? I am a dresser. I like to get dressed, okay? I'm in a hoodie right now, so I'm kind of contradicting myself, but I really like the hair and the makeup and the dresses. Oh, it's been so hard to be inside. And so a song that's just going to celebrate that feeling sort of puts me in the mood and the vibe for it. I also feel like I haven't done it yet. It's definitely a song you can listen to in your car with all of your windows down and your bass maxed out. And you're just like, you feel like you own the world. It's such a good song, guys. It's the best.
That is a hype way to sell a song. The only song I've learned in the last year has been She Stole My Broccoli Casserole Recipe 8 years ago. The TikTok
what
song.
Is this?
Wait, you have to know it. She stole my broccoli casserole recipe 8 years ago.
She claimed it was hers. That's a great one.
This is the most Midwest thing you've ever said.
No, I promise you, it's actually Montreal. It's this Canadian actual musician wrote two TikTok songs, and the lyrics are dialogue from like Facebook comment things.
Wow.
And this one is all of this lyrics are dialogue from these women arguing about a casserole recipe, and it's I'm sending it to you. I've really detracted, and now I've snuck in secretly too. Yeah. What's good?
That and BTS's Dynamite were pretty much what all of last year was about.
Yeah, pretty fabulous. Pretty fabulous.
Hey, you guys, if he never gets a good intro, but he's the man with the muscles, the guy with the good stuff,
the thirstiest of all Twitters.
Yes.
What's good?
Oh man, there's a lot, you know, good. A lot good, you know. New Year is here, off to a rip roaring start. But also, you know, same thing. I got a new vehicle. I bought myself a new vehicle at the end of the last year, and it's I feel the same way, Joel. There's nowhere to go. So you know, I've just been driving to the supercharger station and back home because you know, it's just been charged, keeping it charged. And that's my drive. You know, I've been on hyper lockdown now. So with the Smoshvilles, they said I can't even go to grocery stores anymore. I have to do Instacart. So I've just been cooking lots of keto creations. You know, I'm getting my skin, you know, as Drea said off air, looks good because I've been really doing my finger circles because I'm just, you know, killing time.
Getting that's beautiful all we for can the do. World. Get ready. Yeah,
getting beautiful. So as soon as they say it's time to step out of this world, then
look
guess
out.
What?
I do want to just interpret that by finger circles, he means facial massage.
Yes.
But it's an endeavor I support.
Yeah.
Even when you call it finger circles.
Yeah.
Open to interpretation.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah. You know what? Do whatever you want with your fingers, guy.
Yeah.
Like, don't let me
you
tell
know,
you.
It's yeah.
But
it's,
mostly like, wash them, please.
Yeah. Wash the fingers.
As long as they're clean, circle whatever you want.
Yeah. Clean after. Before and after, keep them clean. Today's show, we're going to be discussing Wonder Woman 1984. We're going to take a Who Shot Line call, and of course, we'll have some staff picks. But first, before we get into anything, it's time for our new segment, In a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is this important? Do I care? And first up, we have Daisy Ridley. In a recent interview with Tatler magazine, because they're tattling on celebs, Star Wars actor Daisy Ridley voiced her concerns about being labeled intimidating and aggressive on set because she fears she won't be able to land roles if she gets that reputation. During the interview, she told an anecdote about the time on the set of the yet unreleased film Chaos Walking. I've been told that I'm intimidating. I was having my hair done, having my wig put on. I remember thinking, God, should I be smaller? Should I be quieter? I've been called aggressive too. My energy is quite aggressive. That was during my meeting with a director. She added, I was thinking, but why? Is it because I maintain eye contact? Is it because I'm passionate about what we're talking about? I don't know. You have that horrible sinking feeling of, God, do I not come across the way I think I do? Is this important? Do you care?
I'm reminded of that Ab Fab episode where they're working with Naomi Campbell and she's literally sort of like just sort of sitting there having a tea and people keep going through the room going, oh, she's being very difficult. She's being very difficult and she's not doing anything. But like, you know, she has this reputation that precedes her. And so it's this notion of like people just decided, oh, well, you're this way. And then whatever happens, it's like you could just be sitting there with a blank look on your face like, oh, my God, she's being so aggressive.
Right. Or the blank look can be read as intimidating. People like to project a whole lot.
Yeah, I would say that she's not dealing with anything that most women at some level don't have to deal with at some point, mm-hmm. which is not to like say that it shouldn't be a concern. It's plaguing constantly. It's just too many exclamation points in my email is a thought I have to have sometimes. Yeah. It's very annoying. Like I totally understand where she comes from. And to your point, Drea, I don't think that there is a way to fix that. There isn't. You just have to come as you are and hope people accept that, because what else am I gonna, I can't make you feel less intimidated by me.
Yeah.
And if I could, it's just, and then that's just a whole, or I could, but it's a lot of extra work for me that I'm personally not gonna do. Either you're here with it or you're not. Yeah. Gotta keep it pushing. Daisy's talented enough that I think is, you know, it's Hollywood, so hopefully you don't piss off the wrong person. But other than that, I feel like you gonna be good, Daisy.
Yeah. I mean,
That emotional labor of women category. We're like, oh, do I have to start showing up with brownies now so everybody can calm down?
Oh, right. Sure.
Yeah. Mm. I know it's kind of the thing too, like where it's a thing that male actors never have to worry about. You know, you have people who, you know, can get mad because someone walked across the wrong way.
You're in my eye line.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just goes completely viral. And then everyone's kind of like, oh man, whoa, what a dick, kind of. And then you proceed to have a career versus like, and I think this, you know, extremely affects black actresses where like you all it takes is one person to say this about you. And then you can't, you know, you can't express any emotion or you can't be frustrated. And I you know, working in a lot of creative spaces, there's this like interesting thing on like, you know, the way people want to take, you know, what you're naturally doing, where if like someone is frustrated after a scene and they kind of mutter to themselves, you know, someone sees that and then they take it personally and they're like, oh, they meant it to me, when really it had nothing to do with them. And then now it's a whole issue that doesn't have to be it. And I think it's those across the board sexist thing where if a guy does it, you know, he's just passionate about his art and he wants, you know, he's just trying to get that line down. And if a woman does, it's like, whoa, calm down, you broad, you know, this is Hollywood, you should be happy that we're giving you a chance. And this is the PA saying this, you know, like
we did Sean Young so wrong, you know, for being aggressive about wanting to be cast as Catwoman, which if a guy had done the same kind of thing, it would have been like, oh, he's so dedicated.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, he really wants it. And they would have given it to him too.
So this is an interdict that's actually not a headline, but something that came up in a conversation on the Who Shot You Facebook page, facebook.com/groups/Who Shot You podcast, which we thought was interesting enough to explore further. And it was brought up by listener Lauren Bonney. She says that we could talk about this on the show, but, quote, just please let everyone know that I love the show, their work, and I bow down before Drea as my queen of the Midwest. I am in Iowa, just south of Minnesota. Anyway, so Lauren says, for the past several months, we've talked about how studios are focusing more and more on streaming platforms. We've looked at a lot of the positive aspects of this trend and how things like film festivals have broadened out to a wider audience than maybe people who could travel to, you know, New York or Sundance or whatever. But there is a downside that we haven't really talked about, and that's accessibility to internet access. Lauren says, quote, there are many Americans who don't have access to high-speed internet still because of their location or their income/budget. Because of COVID, a lot of households are using up their data allotment for their children to attend online schools. She says if theaters close in her area, she would have to drive an hour and a half to get to the closest cinema. And as studios move away from physical media, it's harder and harder for people to get access to new releases when streaming internet speeds are not an option. Thank you, Lauren, for bringing us this topic. You guys, is this important? Do you care?
Oh, man, this is extremely important to me because this highlights something that I was very aware of and totally forgot of. As, you know, the resident nerd, hyper net for all type advocate, I often forget,
and possessor of the best internet out of all of us.
Yes, But like... I mean, but honestly, the way it works, right, is like, you know, you can't even get like my internet if they didn't do it, because back in the area code, auctions they did back when the this totally like gray area, probably illegal, where all the different phone companies auction off parts of the city. This happened in major cities. And then the further away it got from major cities and in their eyes, less money, they just cared less and less about internet speeds. And the only reason we get faster internet speeds is to compete with other competitors. And and when you're in these places, you don't get it. And I remember too, because I used to be out in Provo, Utah often, and I would use their internet. And that was so I've firsthand experienced how rough it can be with these. And I remember it was totally like, it totally felt like one of those like city folk in the country moments. Cause I'm like, well, why don't y'all get faster internet? They're like, this is the fastest internet. Like, this is what we can get. And that was the first time I was like, it's so wild, because you have something as like, I truly do believe access to internet is very important. And, you know, and to not even make an effort to make it accessible to everyone, both makes an argument for one, making it accessible, and two, in Alonzo's camp, not getting rid of physical media, not fully depending on these streamer services, because this is a very real thing that I'm glad was brought up to talk about. People need access to the films, especially if, you know, say, they didn't want to drive all the way and they're like, we'll just wait till it comes out to physical media because I don't want to, you know, drive to the theater and what have you. And then they decide, oh no, we'll just have it on Disney Plus. Sign up. Here's a free code that does nothing for you.
Well, I mean, like if you get the Netflix DVD service, I assume that doesn't mean they're going to send you like I'm Thinking of Ending Things or other Netflix titles that they're currently, their originals that they're streaming, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, because Netflix does release a lot of their streaming stuff in packaged DVDs in stores.
Eventually, so like at Target.
It does take a while to get to DVD, but there's an opportunity that you might be able to. But like, to all of your points, the internet is absolutely a necessity. The fact that it isn't just free for everybody still boggles my mind. We absolutely have to use it. You cannot apply for a job anymore if you don't have internet. Like door-to-door, like just job interviews are not an option. And as someone who recently went 2 hours without internet, my God, what a horrible world. I can't, no. So yeah, definitely important.
I think if I recommend people going to our Facebook page and reading Lauren's entire post, because it's very well written and it's anecdotal, but has a lot of just great details in it. And there are things that I'm embarrassed didn't come up when we were talking about the positives of things. Like for me specifically, festivals being online has been so great. And what I think of in terms of access is coming from like people being able to afford to go to Park City or things like that. But it is so much more fine-tuned than that. Like, access isn't just about going places. The idea of city to city or state to state, like the different things that we're able to literally access, is crazy. And there's only one federal program, the Lifeline program, that has anything that does a subsidy for families who are trying to get internet. And even that is pretty restricted. There's hope that Biden will increase it. It's something like $10 a month now, which doesn't even cover most normal internet costs. And this is all, again, separate from what Iffy said, that it's two pronged, both the cost of it and then the actual infrastructure of where it goes to. So, and this, the other way that this has come up so clearly has been in schooling and in all of the online education that people have needed to do for COVID. And I know in LA, they had some horrifying statistic of LAUSD kids, like 40% of them didn't have access to internet. And the idea of, you know, for so many people, as rough as home or schooling online has been, it's at least been something. And that there's so many families left in the dirt. Anyway, I think there's so much here, and I think it's great to always be challenging and looking past, like, what you, because it's so easy to forget how perspectives are different or experiences are different from like one place to another. And I should know better because I already know Iowa is south of Minnesota. And I have spent plenty of time in Nebraska, where most of my family is, which is west of Iowa. So like, it is an area that's deep in my heart. And yes, the time, like if he was saying, I have gone to Nebraska and been like, ugh, I'll just like amuse myself. And then even I'm like, what? How can I not? I can't stream. I have my like 6-year-old iPad that I can't stream anything on. Cool. I guess I'll read this World War II book from my grandpa's bookshelf. Like,
yeah, like in the same way that FDR, like, you know, with the Tennessee Valley Authority, went and brought electricity to all these rural parts of the country that never had it. We need an equivalent thing for Wi-Fi. It's ridiculous. Like, there's, you know, like you guys are saying, you cannot exist in the modern world without having access to the internet. And it's the same stuff that came up when, you know, when Trump was trying to destroy the post office. You know, like the Republican Party has been trying to destroy the post office for decades now by making them prepay all of these pensions and put all this onus on them that no other governmental agency has to do. And they want, you know, FedEx and UPS to be able to waltz in and take over. But guess what? FedEx and UPS do not deliver to huge swaths of the country. And those folks are often relying on the mail to bring them like prescription drugs and stuff like that. And so the post office serves this, you know, this underutilized or an underserved area of the country. And we should be, you know, they should also, in addition to having the mail brought to them, they should also be getting their email.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Wonder Woman 1984, just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Together, we're The Flophouse,
a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then talk about it.
Movies like Space Hobos, Into the Outer Reaches of the Unknown and the Things That We Don't Know, the movie, and also Who's That Grandma?
Zazzle Zippers, Breakdown 2, and Backhanded Compliment.
Elvis is a Policeman.
Baby Crocodile and the Happy Twins.
Leftover Potatoes?
Station Wagon 3.
Herbie Goes to Hell.
New episodes available every other Saturday.
Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bye. Bye.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and in the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Joelle Monique.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Wonder Woman 1984. Drea, would you mind providing us with an, in all caps, brief synopsis?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I will do my best. Wonder Woman 1984, we are once again with Diana. And we begin in Themyscira, which is wonderful. We see the Amazons competing. It's a flashback when she's young. She learns a lesson about how truth is our strongest compass. And then we go forward to the future, and that future is 1984. So we're 70 years out from the first one where she suffered the loss of her love, Steve Trevor. She's lived a life where it looks like she hasn't made any other friends since then, and her friends from World War I have all died off. She's working in a museum and is introduced to a new employee there, Barbara Minerva, a cute but nerdy gal, and a device art. What is it like? Artifact comes in. Thank you. A stone or an artifact, whatever you want to call it. And they're going to get to the root of it because it is magical, which Diana knows because it has writing of the gods on it. It's basically a dream stone. There is another villain introduced, played by my boyfriend Pedro Pascal, who gets the dream stone. And, you know, chaos ensues. Basically, you make a wish and you also have to, you know, lose something as a result of that wish. And Diana brings back Steve Trevor as her wish, possibly reconnecting with her humanity in the process. Also, the world almost explodes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of fighting and stuff happens, too.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think this is the perfect way to kick off this discussion, which is the first question super producer Casey O'Brien wrote, which is this movie as bad as the internet claims it is?
I saw it early and I really enjoyed it. Like,
I enjoyed this movie.
I thought it was a delight, and I was kind of gobsmacked at how vitriolic people are about this movie. I don't know.
I think this movie continues the trend of what's going on, DC? Of just, I don't understand why you have some of the best source material in comic books and we cannot get it together onto a screen. It's frustrating because they always have these like really wonderful moments. Like, controversial statement here, but I love the swinging from the lightning. Everything about that scene was built for me. I liked the introduction is maybe one of the best intros since like early our 90s Batman intros. Like, this gets it right.
Were you psyched that they had the same young girl play young Diana? Like, even that detail was such a great one.
Yeah, the world feels great and really full. But then when it gets into the superhero or fantasy elements, they're suddenly like, they don't want to deal with the fantasy. And they're like trying to like get away from it as much as they can. But if you made your movie about a magic rock, like, so you really have to go full tilt into the fantasy elements. You cannot try to stay grounded in reality. It makes no sense. And it became such a huge problem for me. Like, the prop design on that piece. Is this the main prop we're supposed to be all excited about?
They do a close-up when they introduce it, because it's, you know, they find it in this mall scene. There's a jewelry store being broken into, and they did a close-up on it. I watched this movie twice, and both times I'm like, what am I supposed to be looking at in that crate? Like, it's the funniest. One thing that you said that I'd be interested, because you guys definitely have more knowledge of the comics themselves than I do, but another thing, like, to me, there's a few uphill battles that Wonder Woman stories have always. One is that in these incarnations specifically, that there's an earnestness and an optimism to what we're getting from her that I think makes it harder, because there's nothing cool about earnest optimism. Mm-hmm. To me, there is, but like in the like coolness realm. So that's a tricky, but also when I was looking at it, when you mentioned DC, I forgot you meant DC Comics, because this takes place in Washington, DC.
It sure does.
And like is largely, and the difference of having this be in a real American city, we're not in Gotham, we're not in Metropolis, we're not in Capital City. And that also changes things a little in terms of that it's almost like it requires them to stay grounded in ways that the other ones might have a little more permissiveness with because of that.
Yeah. I'm right in line with Joel. And I say this about a lot of movies done this way. And by done this way, I mean like, you know, other writers butting in, because I definitely feel like this is Geoff Johns butting in to Patty Jenkins's pie. And you could feel it. There are two different movies here. And I think the reason why it feels the way it, Joelle was explaining was because the Max Lord storyline is this grounded, very dark storyline. And then the one with Cheetah is more fun. And like, you know, it seemed like the Cheetah storyline felt like what we were advertised. It was this fun 1980s, you know, we're not going to take itself serious, which DC needs. DC needs, like, get over the dark, get over, like, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, dunk on, you know, your Snyder and Nolan darkness, you know, I'll die for Sucker Punch, you know, like that, and that is Ooh. A film that people will look
I
at
love
me
Sucker
being like,
Punch.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, but that being so said,
leave this house.
Yeah, that being said, you know what you know what Marvel does really well is allow their movies to have different filters. They don't have to all be shot under the gray blues that Justice League is, and there. And that's actually what I liked about Aquaman, even though a lot of people didn't have fun with that one. I like
or
that
it, Shazam.
Yeah, exactly. Those, and it felt like, and I was so hyped, and one of the first scenes we see Wonder Woman in this very fun romp of just like she's gonna go around saving the day, and then Cheetah
in a mall.
It seemed like it you could see where it was going in such a beautiful way, where like, oh, the kind of clumsy dorky coworker who kind of looks up to her, oh yeah, she's gonna want the job, and that's gonna be the fun thing. And then we get this Max Lord storyline, which is great and fine, but it's very dark. It seems like a part of a different movie, seems like a different theme than the one we were building here. Like this, and to me, you know, funny enough, coming from a man, it really did feel like it was like pushing the women, you know, driven storyline to the side to focus on this man and his wants, you
ding,
know,
ding, ding, ding,
it was like, it's like, let's follow this. And then when we do get to see Cheetah, it's too dark. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I want to figure out
CGI for.
I want to lay out my case for why the Maxwell Lord plot fits with the fun, Ooh, bubbly like 80s that. Stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So Maxwell Lord, and not that you this matters, you have to know this, but Maxwell Lord in the comics was always introduced or was always presented as a very Donald Trumpian figure. He was like a brash business guy, very glib, very good on camera, but also like working a hustle and you know, trying desperately to keep up with circumstances. To me, what Patty Jenkins is doing in this movie is sort of taking this, when people think about 1984, it's like, ooh, you know, parachute pants and malls and fanny packs and, you know, synthesizers and all that kind of fun stuff. But it was also like the era of fucking Ronald Reagan. And fucking Ronald Reagan is the reason that everything is so terrible now. Like, he's the one who started the ball rolling into the current nightmare of what the GOP is. And because of Ronald Reagan, we wound up with Donald Trump. So I think that this movie is sort of trying to bring you into the glossy fun, like, you know, Commander Salamander in DC, you know, like side of the 80s, but also sort of be like, and this is what lays the groundwork and what and where this all comes from at its base is greed. And that there's never enough. There's you always want more. You want more. You want more. You know, there always has to be growth. The market always has to be climbing. You can't like have ebbs and tides. It all has to be just forward, more, gimme. And so I think that she's very, you know, cogently kind of connecting the dots for us as to how the avarice of the 1980s led to the like horrifying disaster of late stage capitalism, basically. And she's doing it in a superhero movie to the point where the Donald Trump character, A, is given the ultimate power, misuses it, but would rather destroy everything than give it up. And B, goes on and tries to get the entire world on board this whole wish thing, which is in itself the ultimate pyramid scheme.
But don't a they kind of blow
scheme.
That?
Yeah.
It's true. And like all of that really, really works until the third act. Don't you think? Like, I just feel like they
also
completely
agreed.
Blow it up,
they,
and then
they don't know how to end these movies. That's I've enjoyed both of these movies, but when you get to that big ending fight, and you're like, "This is what we came." Because like you look at a movie like Doctor Strange, where they're like, "Let's figure out another way to do this that isn't just like a couple people punching each other out and a lot of wind and a lot of lights." And it's like, and he outsmarts whatever I forget what the villain thing is in that movie. But these Wonder Woman movies, you're right. It just comes down to a big CG a-thon, you know?
There's also the problem with the third act here that And again, we've spent so much time with Max Lord, but that the final showdown is her just like whispering from a corner.
And
she's also connected to him with her lasso of truth. But I'm like, well, I don't understand what
it's not
truth
clear.
He's giving. It's just sort of murky. I think that all could have been cleaned mm-hmm. up. It was just them trying to figure out, like, because for a lot of this, it did feel so much smaller. The first one, you know, they're like crawling through the trenches and you have no man's land. You have them saving this entire village and it feels big. And like what they're doing is like big and significant. So this one, I see them needing to open up the world, needing this threat to be bigger than it currently feels. And that's where it gets slippy. I do think there's something to say too of these villains. Obviously, I love the villains, but I found it really unique. Both of these, from my reading of it, and it's also a little murky, are that these are two villains these are not Lex Luthor's. These are both in Barbara Minerva's Cheetah and in Max Lord. You have two people who are left at the end facing their own, what they did. Like that they're cognizant of the harms that they've caused and feeling regretful. And that to me was an interesting choice. I don't know if it's explored enough, but you so rarely see like that Thanos is not like, oh man, what have I done? And that you have two people left with this introspection and this, you know, I don't think villains should just be left with that. Also in the real world, they should suffer consequences. Just saying, I'm a girl who wants some consequences right now. Yes. But it's unique in terms of a narrative device to have both of these villains aware of what they've done and having to live with that.
I wish that Zack Snyder hadn't written Diana into a corner where no one can know she exists until we get to the 2000s or whatever. You know, so like the whole idea of when she shows up in BVS Dawn of Justice, that she's been under the radar for decades. It's like, why? And so now why are we going to have this adventure with her in the 80s where we have to spend all this time of her covering her tracks and like knocking out security cameras and not being on TV with Max Lord and like hiding in a corner somewhere? Literally, it's like, what, to what end?
Why are you putting her light in a bushel? Isn't that the phrase?
Yes.
Nobody puts Diana in a corner.
Nobody puts Diana in a corner. Oh my gosh.
We should vote. We should vote.
Yeah, I guess we should. So, Joelle, as our guest, would you buy it on physical media? Would you? Hold on, let me see.
Would you snatch it up?
Yeah, snatch it up on physical media.
Oh my goodness.
Shop
okay.
it. We were calling that shop it for a minute.
Yeah, but it's snatch it up on physical media, stream it. Or skip it?
Ooh. I would snatch it up on physical media.
Ooh.
Here's why. The bonuses have to be amazing, right? Like, I really want to hear Patty Jenkins, like, director commentary. Like, I really want to see, like, the scenes that got left out of Wonder Woman haunt me. What? If y'all could just leave the women in the film and then find a way to cut around the men, that would be really great for me because I love a lot of these like female-led scenes that got nixed from the original movie. So I want to see what didn't make it into the movie. I want to hear explanations for things and where things might have gone. This movie had like a lot of great moments and a lot of potential. It wasn't quite there for me, but I do love Patty Jenkins and I love Wonder Woman, so I'll take the extras.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. What about you, Drea?
I am also, I don't like saying the word snatch, you guys, but I'm gonna
seize
purchase
it.
This. I'm gonna seize this on physical media. I definitely think there's faults to this movie, but damn, did I enjoy talking them out with people after the fact and also just listing all the things we loved. I think that there's a joy and optimism in these movies that's so nice to see. They're great escapism with some thoughtfulness. I do 100% think that she really, Patty Jenkins, needed to take a harder look at placing a lot of this conflict in the Middle East and how those were handled. I think that stuff went real off the rails, real unnecessarily. But overall, dug this.
All right, now, Alonzo.
I will splurge. I will snag it on physical media. And I'll tell you, for that matter, I will screen it when I can see it in a theater safely one day, because I would like to see it projected.
Oh, God, yeah. All the flight stuff, yeah. I really wanted to see on screen.
I agree the Middle Eastern stuff was a little, pardon the expression, iffy. Although, as somebody who read DC Comics in the 80s, just hearing the word Bialya again was like, oh, that takes me back. Your fake catch-all oil potentate Middle Eastern country. Also, shout out to Hallmark superstar Christopher Palaha, who plays the body that Steve Trevor possesses.
Oh, yeah. Handsome man with scarf.
Handsome man in the credits, yes. Yeah. And he is. Anyway, yeah, I would definitely, I would pay full price for this. It does have problems, but I had a lot of fun with it.
All right, cool. Iffy. Get ready to rain on this parade, brother. Oh,
I mean, I'm not gonna rain it because I got some more smoke for folks. Because while I may be a stream it, even though that strong case of yes, I'd love to see what cut out. First off and foremost, I'm also Patty Jenkins stan, and I will go on record and say I blame anything I don't like about this movie on Geoff Johns. Because if you read the New 52, you'd know exactly what I was talking about. But I will say, any of you dorks on Twitter that said Batman v Superman was better than this movie, go to the gulag. I will drag you to the gulag myself and let you fight your way back
to
out of it.
Boo-log.
Because that is the most false statement ever. Don't ever disrespect any movie by trying to say that garbage pile.
Never speak to me or my son again.
Yeah, exactly.
Call me Martha one more time.
Oh my goodness. Oh, well, now that we've talked about this movie and enjoyed it, and you know, I've properly slandered nerds, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Fairhaven's a city in a bubble, an actual bubble. It keeps the monsters out, most of them anyway.
I never liked the look of movies on Blu-ray. For my money, Betamax is the superior format.
I'm thinking of deleting Facebook and going back to MySpace.
As far as beverages go, I'm just kind of over water.
Though I guess at any given party, you're gonna meet some dudes like that, even if you're not in the middle of a nightmarish wasteland. Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Iffy Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Joelle Monique,
Drea Clark,
and it's the return of the Who Shot Line. Bing, bing, bing. Clack, 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 clack,
clack, clack. Wow.
Let's answer a call from one of our listeners. Casey, play that call.
Hey, Iffy. Hey, Alonzo. Hey, Drea. Hey, Casey. Hey, guest, if there's a guest. So recently I watched Fight Club for the first time, and I was really mad at myself for how much I liked it. I watched it 3 times in less than 2 weeks, and I still want more, but I put off watching it for the longest time, and now I'm terrified of letting my friends know how much I liked it just because of, like, the vibe of, like, bros associated with how much they love it. So I guess my question for you is, what's the movie that you really like but wish you didn't because so many people like it for the wrong reasons? Also, Fight Club is kind of the gayest movie ever. All right, love you guys. Bye.
Hey!
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
So queer.
Yeah.
When I wrote a book called 101 Must-See Gay Movies for Gay Men, the zero on the cover was filled in with a shirtless Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Yeah.
A gift to all of us.
Fight Club's actually a great starting place for this because I think that there's there's elements of that both on the David Fincher fan side and the Chuck Palahniuk. How do you say his name?
Palahniuk.
Palahniuk. Is it Palahniuk?
We all had different versions of saying it.
I used to be a big...
Said it so decisively and in different ways. That guy, I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like if he's read
I was
this
a huge... Chuck like every male in his 20s, every cishet male in his 20s, there's a wobble you make where you can step into the pool of the dark side and you correct and you go to wherever you... every normal human does, or next thing you know, you're wearing, you know, deer fur and your face is painted like Braveheart and you're in the Capitol building.
You're right. Fight Club, I think, is a lot of people who love it miss the point of it.
Oh, yes.
That is a great way to say it. The idea of looking at it and like stepping away and being like, you guys, we should start a fight club.
Fight Club.
Yeah. Oh, this is a how-to? Great.
Cool. Yeah. Very cool, guys. Very good way to analyze yourselves. Well, yeah, no, this one would be both for the story, but also for me, because the other thing that came to mind was Inception, which is a movie I love, and I listed as when we did, I think, our like favorite of the decade for like the last, is that how we did it? Like our favorite movie from each year, maybe? Anyway, or our top five from the last 10 years. Doesn't matter. I picked Inception as one of mine, and I remember getting
that's
like...
Nolan, right? You know,
yes.
Not Fincher.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's what I was saying. Like, similar to Fincher, the Christopher Nolan fan base. So it's less that, like, I think people have problems with Inception or your takeaway from that, but more I find that it annoys me to the extent that... I remember going, and I've definitely talked about this before, but being at the cinema and having back-to-back trailers of the Fantabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn, and then Tenet, and the night and day difference from the audience to those, and I was like so infuriated by their differences, and I just was like, ooh, double middle fingers for this whole room. How dare you? Like, there was such a yawn over Harley Quinn, which, like, got me so... And the collective boner over Tenet was, palpable. Well, and there's something about that of the hero worship of certain... artists.
We can go into that. As a like turbo nerd, I'm constantly in fandoms that I despise members of. I was a huge fan of Rick and Morty. We don't have to even...
I was gonna bring that up.
I've never watched because by the time people were recommending to it, I was already put off by the fandom.
I adore it's so good and so brilliant and iffy. Please go, because I know you're gonna say what I'm thinking.
I mean, it's really... Rick is not a character you're supposed to see the, you know, good in. You're not trying to be like him. He's not impressed. Like, they don't like... he is so transparently written in a way that he is posturing in the way that he talks, and they're just eating it up and not understanding it. And then also, I'm a huge fan of Deadpool, who like... and that's a different side of the same coin, where it's not necessarily that Deadpool's an asshole. He's just like a quick-witted, funny guy, and people who like him assume that they're just as quick-witted and are just shooting jokes, and it was like, oh no please stop,
you're just insulting people.
Exactly that, where... and so all of those things. But you're right about the Nolan thing.
Nolan, Fincher, Michael Mann. Those guys, their fan bases.
Oh, my God. They're also interchangeable. That's a Venn diagram of a single circle. Yeah.
Maybe so. I bet Joelle has thoughts.
I was going to say, now I segue to Star Wars. A fandom.
Somebody had to say it.
Yeah.
A fandom I've loved forever, and now I'm about to launch a new show on. And just when I tell people I like The Last Jedi, it's like I can't hear myself think anymore. There's so many people yelling at
That's my favorite one. I'm with you.
Hey, Drea, what's up? Why? Because it's a space opera and it's shot like art? Ugh. Anyway.
Who wants that?
Why would we get that? The fight doesn't look realistic. That wasn't the point of the fight. So, obviously, I have deep feelings about it. I love the franchise, but yeah, it can be, and I don't wish I didn't love it. I wish there was a greater understanding that you don't, that we've reached a point in franchises where fandoms are so large and where we're including so many voices and filmmakers that they're going to be different. And it's a good thing. It's a great thing that we can have variety in these franchises, which are clearly not going to go anywhere. They make way too much money. So, you know, let people enjoy their segments. In the same way, I try not to clown too hard on a lot of the DC movies that I clearly just, they're not for me, but if they're your camp, I'm not going to come and shit in your camp. You know, you can enjoy that. You have a right.
You're not going to try and yuck someone else's yum.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fandoms just give me the willies. And so I try to keep my distance as much as possible. I still remember in the early days of the internet, like, I've always been a Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan. And that always seemed to me like, nah, I wasn't wading into this, you know, like, difficult territory. But, like, I still remember the Mike versus Joel wars of, you know, the late 90s or whatever that was, or the early 90s, maybe, that was just like, this is getting really ugly. And I have a very good friend who adores the show Schitt's Creek and is like, cannot stand the fandom of Schitt's Creek, because, like,
I almost mentioned Schitt's Creek just because they act like that show is the savior of all things good, and I'm like, listen, it's a real good show. I don't take anything away from it, but y'all, it's a TV show.
Like, yeah, I've reached a point where, like, I love a thing, and I would just as soon not talk to anybody else who also loves that thing, because it's going to get me somewhere I don't want to be.
That's why Alonzo and I don't talk Letterkenny. We'd start our own weird fandom and just annoy everybody.
All right.
I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, yeah.
You are, again, you're right. Fight Club, hella gay.
Super queer.
And I loved it. Ooh, I mean, well, you know, my bae Helena Bonham Carter is in there, so,
that's, I like the cigarette near me anytime, babe.
Yes, please, please. I will eat it up and ask for more. But thank you to everyone who's called in. The number for the Who Shot line is WSY-803-1664. Call us in and let us tell you about it. All right, staff picks. It is time. It could be any movie at all. Joelle, why don't you start?
Yeah, given the events of yesterday, I'm referring to the coup because it's not yesterday for you. I really appreciate the film I Am Not Your Negro. It is basically a... it's an attempt to finalize James Baldwin's life work. He was working on a book when he passed. He had a couple of lines written down, but not very many. And so they took everything he said previously that ever been taped or recorded it and overlaid it with images from America trisected by three great leaders in the Black American community. It is, past the point of being able to be optimistic about race relations in America. I've reached 30 and I'm just like, well, no, this is just the way it is. And Baldwin was clearly at that point. I think he's like mid-40s or 50s, early 50s. And hearing not just his exhaustion, but a very clear-cut response to that, being able to see it in a way that is not sensationalized, in a way that's like, no, this is just our reality. It's so great because I can no longer hear this is not us, or we don't do this, or it's not the case. And so for somebody to just be like, no, I see it and I recognize it and it's there and you're not crazy and it's persistent and it won't go away. It's helpful. It's healing. It's grounding. And I can't recommend it enough. I saw it at TIFF and I want to say 2016, 2015, somewhere in there. It's on Netflix right now streaming and wonderful.
Ooh,
great, great movie.
I'll back that up. Okay, not surprising to anybody, you guys, but it's a previous Sundance film.
No.
A lot of good films come out of Sundance. How dare you, Alonzo? And it is it's a film currently on Amazon Prime called Sylvie's Love.
Oh,
I adore this film. If you're looking for... this is that kind of transcendent escapism. It has beautiful old Hollywood, like Douglas Sirk feeling to it. It's a proper love story, all things that I love. It's so romantic and has incredible music and it just looks sumptuous, but has like these rich, believable characters. And that they're black elevates it to this way of like, oh, we could have been making movies like this all along. I'm so glad we are now. But it's Tessa Thompson. And then I'm not going to get any man's correct today. I'm going to say Namdi Asamuga. That's the producer.
No, I think that is.
He's the lead, Robert. Yes. And so set in the 50s, and her dad owns a record store and he starts working there and they fall in love early and then life happens and his musical career takes off. And so it's this love story that traces through all these things. And I recommend it as a warm hug of beauty for you.
Yes. Delicious. Ooh. I really love that movie too. So I want to pay tribute to a great American indie filmmaker who recently passed away, Joan Micklyn Silver, one of the few working female directors of the 1970s, and a real pioneer in a lot of ways, and probably best known for her first film, Hester Street, which got a Best Actress nomination for Carol Kane, and for her one of her more recent, also best known for Crossing Delancey, a wonderful rom-com with Amy Irving and Peter Riegert. I wanted to recommend a couple of films that are very accessible on streaming. Between the Lines on the Criterion Channel. It's this great ensemble movie of people who weren't famous yet, like Jeff Goldblum and John Hurd, and Mary Lou Henner is in it, actually, in a small role. It's about an underground newspaper being bought out by a large corporation, and so it's sort of a Death of the 60s movie, but it's also kind of about, you know, if you've ever lived in a major city that had a great, you know, independent newspaper that became not independent, you know, you've lived this story. It's a really dynamite movie. Also over on Canopy is a short adaptation that she did of the F. Scott Fitzgerald story Bernice Bobs Her Hair, starring Shelley Duvall. It is one of the best F. Scott Fitzgerald adaptations you will ever see. And anyway, Joan Micklyn Silver, a giant. We don't give her enough credit as being, like, in my book, right alongside John Cassavetes in terms of major independent American filmmakers after World War II and before Sundance. So check her out. Learn more about her stuff. She's amazing.
Yes.
Okay, well, keeping that accessible grind going with these staff picks, I'm gonna suggest an animated short that is available on YouTube that I'm sure Dre and Alonzo have already seen, directed by Chintis Lundgren in 2017. It's Manivald. Y'all seen that joint?
I don't know that I have.
Manivald.
Okay, well, it's about a fox who's turning 33, living with his overbearing mother and, a hot, sexy repairman fox comes over and both the mom and Manivald are thirsting over this fox, and hilarity ensues. So it's a nice, cute, funny, horny fox movie, short that I think is great. It's available on the YouTubes. Had a nice little run in the fest circuit, but check it out. Enjoy.
That's basically
it.
How I describe you, by the way. He's like hot, funny fox movie. Yeah.
Repairman Fox.
Repairman Fox. Yeah. See if a Repairman Fox gives you iffy vibes, let me know. But now it's time for the 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review, we'll read it on air. I smacked my mic. Okay, here we go. Okay, this is great. Scream. This one is from Scream Queen for a Day. Drea Stan Post! 3! Just finished the Mank episode, and I am so freaking pleased. I subscribe to a bunch of film podcasts and have mostly been listening to other critics They're so annoyingly taken with the let's enable the drunk genius archetype. I just needed one other person to express my disgust with that initial writer's room and pitch scene, and I got it. Thank you, Drea. Also, shouts to Ben, because I like The Cat's Meow so much more than Mank and want more people to see it.
Nice. That's so nice. I'll take a stand post. Yes, we were all, I will say, all as a collective, Alonzo, Ben, and I, who did that episode, none of us had time for that poor secretary and her pasties.
Exactly.
Stuck in the room with those men. And I'm glad that's reverberating with other people, because it should be.
Yes.
Drunken geniuses.
Yeah.
Get a job. Up by women. Speaking
of Rick and Morty.
Gorgeous women playing roles too far out of their age range. Sorry.
Yeah. Yes. Now go off. Joelle, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Oh, man. Y'all know what it is. You can find me anywhere on the internet at Joelle Monique. It's JoelleMoniqueE. Find out more details there.
Yeah. Anything else that y'all would like to promote, my fellow hosts Drea and Alonzo? You know, always here, hold me down, back 10 toes down, getting it in.
I do want to throw out a quick plug, just a movie that I recommended, I think, as a staff pick a while ago, and that was also on my top 10 list. Frederick Wiseman's documentary City Hall is streaming for free at pbs.org through January 19th. All 4.5 hours of it. So if you want to see it, and you should, and you don't want to have to pay for it, pbs.org, go check that out.
Oh, all right.
Check that.
My birthday is 2 days after this comes out. So
Happy birthday, everybody. Send me
good vibes and energy, and you know, Venmo me. No, I'm just kidding. Do not Venmo me. Yeah. but think of me on January 10th, and I will use that power and put it in an artifact, and I'll get a wish, and I'll do a whole thing.
Well, if you'd like to support the show, please visit MaximumFun.org/join. If you'd like to purchase a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's 100 for a personal message or 200 for a promotional one. Again, the number for the Who Shot line is WSY 803-1664. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. And our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Goodbye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.